more thoughts on the names discussed yesterday. Where is that? Ah, yes. There we go. So, Vaidya. Which means the one who knows that which is knowable, or he knows that which is to be known, or he knows the proper subject of knowing. Vaidya, of course, means also doctor. And he is the healing principle in any medicine. We can give any medicine, but it may or may not work. Or we can offer some treatment, but it may or may not work. You've probably had experience of this. Sometimes you go to the best doctor and people say, yes, sure cure. But as Prabhupada said, the doctors, they will always say guaranteed cure, but there's no guarantee. It all depends on Krishna. He is the healing principle in medicine. Another consideration is that he's kind to the living beings, and although conditioned souls, they make their own suffering by forgetting Krishna. But he also appears as Dhanvantari and gives the medical science to help the conditioned souls. If they follow certain practices given by Dhanvantari and his representatives. I just said yesterday morning that if we go to any doctor, any Ayurvedic doctor, they'll always have a picture of Dhanvantari. So yesterday I went to the place of Dvibhuja Prabhu, who's a doctor, and he also had picture of Dhanvantari there. So he gives this system of medicine by which also people, their faith in the Vedic, well, one point is that helps to relieve them from that suffering, and they can have faith in the Vedic processes, because Ayurveda is also not directly Vedic, but a sub-Vedic process. And actually, in the process of Ayurveda, it's not just a matter of taking some medicine, but even that medicine has to be, if it's properly prepared, has to be prepared with mantra. It has to be administered with mantra. And the vaidya, the doctor, is, well, naturally must have faith in the Vedas, in the Vedic process. Otherwise, how could he follow that? So, the whole process is centered around following the Vedic process, offering, by reciting the mantra, invokes the mercy, ultimately, of the Supreme Lord. There are also rules and regulations to be followed. The doctor will, as Srila Prabhupada also said, that a doctor who just gives medicine but doesn't give any rules of how to live, what to eat and what not to eat. That's a very important consideration. And in fact, Srila Prabhupada often said that he would cure himself just by adjusting his diet. If you know what to eat, what not to eat. If you're not very sick, then the disease can be overcome. So, by following, there are certain restrictions. Definitely, if one, generally, if one eats less, that is better for health. That will also help to calm the raging mind. If one leads a very regulated life, which is necessary for good health, that's also good, for, again, for calming the mind and making it focused and introspective. So all these processes given by this supreme healer, the supreme healer of the not only medicine for the body, but also he is the healer who heals from the ultimate disease, which is bhavarog, the disease of birth and death. That's the worst disease. What's the worst disease? Well, you may say that fatal disease? Yeah. What's that called?
Terminal.
Yeah, you can't escape from it. But you think, well, death is the worst thing that could happen to you. But there's also birth. Death means to get born again and to suffer again. But Krishna gives the medicine which helps others to get free from birth and death. He knows, he's the knower of the Vedas, and he makes an effort to help others know. Others should take this knowledge. He comes to this world repeatedly to give the knowledge by which others can get free from birth and death. The root cause of all suffering is ignorance. So by giving knowledge, he treats others. There are various processes of yoga, but which are all ultimately meant for conquering birth and death. But we should know the root cause of birth and death is ignorance. So knowledge is required, which ultimately means knowledge of our relationship with Krishna. So a vaidya, a doctor, he should be very learned in his profession. But we may find that even though two doctors are more or less the same in their learning, but one nevertheless is more expert because he knows how to treat the disease. It's not just a matter of learning, but learning all the formulae. But there is also, that's also a gift of God, that intuition by which one can understand what is the problem and how to treat it. So intuition means that we don't know where, we just feel and understand something without directly perceiving it or without logically trying to understand how it is. It's like revealed knowledge. So, but Krishna actually knows everything. So he knows how to treat every individual person. What is their exact disease? How to deal with them? We also find in Sri Chaitanya-charitamrita that there is the description of Sadguru as Vaidya. That description is given, that the proper guru is just like a doctor. So, although the general formulae are given in Shastra for getting free from birth and death, for advancing in spiritual consciousness, but guru is also required to deal with individuals individually according to their particular need. It's not a very good idea to try to treat one's own disease just by reading books. It is much better to go to an experienced doctor who has, by experience, has insight into the nuances of a person's condition. Yeah, everyone's condition is different. And one feature of Ayurveda that distinguishes it from the gross Western system of knowledge is that there's no rote formula, but the condition of the individual has to be considered. Of course, that's also there in Western medicine, but not nearly to the extent that it is in Ayurveda. So, Krishna is the expert vaidya, acting through the guru. He administers the required treatment in a manner that is suitable for the person, that the person, that the patient can accept it and incorporate it into his life and become cured from ignorance of Krishna, which is the cause of all suffering. So another name yesterday, Sada Yogi, which can also be, means who's always a yogi. Then another way that can be understood is Sada Ayogi, which means that Krishna is always not a yogi. So in the sense that he's not a yogi like someone who has to perform any sadhana. There's no need of Krishna to perform any sadhana because he is always perfect and he is the object of all sadhanas anyway. So he's always above the position of even a highly accomplished yogi. He is he is intrinsically Yogeshwara. He's the master of all yogic perfection. So he doesn't need to undergo any sadhana, as Srila Prabhupada often said. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even from the beginning of his appearance in this world, he was, before he had any opportunity for meditation or yogic practice, he was killing demons left, right, and center. So he was filled with, already manifested all kinds of mystic powers that a yogi could only achieve after many, many births. Of course, it may be said that someone has mystic power from activities he performed in previous lives, but that is not the case with Krishna. He's always above all sadhana. Oh. Then the next name, Viraha, which means, Vira means hero, and Ha means slayer. So Krishna is the killer of those heroic demons. They may be demons, but they also are heroes, inasmuch they have that heroic spirit, fighting spirit. Of course, in a demon, that is not very good. A real hero is one who fights for the sake of dharma. But it takes a great hero to fight with Krishna. Not everyone is qualified. Of course, there are many who Krishna just killed. They're just mentioned en masse. But specific demons like Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, they were very powerful. Not possible to be slain by anyone else. But Krishna, he killed them all and will continue to kill so many heroes. So from this we should understand that Krishna is the greatest hero. We know that phrase, hero worship. People like to worship heroes. They naturally look up to someone who is very powerful and noble, who can protect us, who performs amazing activities. So there's no doubt that Krishna is by far the most heroic. That quality of chivalry is particularly that is particularly manifest or appropriate in relation to protecting women who are called abala, means they're not very strong compared to men. So chivalry is particularly for protecting women, and Krishna, he particularly protected women by killing bad men. Who mistreated, especially he rescued 16,108 queens from Bhomasura. Was it not? I'm also empty head today. So they were all taken away in a hopeless condition. But Krishna rescued them from that hopeless condition and gave them a very most desirable position possible, far more than any princess. Normal, I mean, princesses are not normal anyway, but they live in luxury, but he gave them a condition far better than any others. And in this case, in contradistinction to fairy stories, they all lived happily ever after. The only story we can say which they actually lived happily ever after, because ever after, yeah, because the other fairy stories that you rescue someone. I was just told that one video has been put on YouTube where a man is walking by the railway track and he hears, "Help, help, help." And there's a woman tied up on the railway track. No, I think it's a story. And she's the train is coming and the man valiantly rescues her, unties her, and guess what? They fall in love and they get married. So after some time, he's sitting watching the TV at home, drinking beer, and she's saying, "Why don't you help me with the things to dishes to be washed?" And he picks her up, ties her up, and puts her on the rail track. That's not the end of the story. And then she's calling, "Help, help!" And then someone else comes and rescues her. And it goes on and on and on and on like this. So Krishna actually lives happily ever after with his queens. So Krishna is the killer of great heroes who no one else could kill. And they were very confident of not being killed, of not being killable, especially Hiranyakashipu. He just presumed that he could not be killed. And then he made the same mistake again as Ravana. But all the foolishly heroic attempts to avoid Krishna are vanquished by Krishna, ultimately. Also, Krishna, he conquers the foolishly heroic attempts of the conditioned souls to avoid Krishna. Everyone considers themselves a great hero, even at least in the fantasy. One may be living an totally humdrum life, but in his imagination, he's a heroic person. And nowadays, you can be a computer game hero. You're just a completely insignificant person with a completely unnoteworthy life. If a train happened to run over you, you might get 3 lines in the newspaper. Otherwise, no claims to glory. But when the in the computer game, you're a great hero. You're fighting intergalactic enemies and saving the earth and all this kind of thing. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's probably what it is. I never even looked at a computer game, let alone. I can imagine that's what it is, because it's a fairly stereotyped kind of plot. So Krishna conquers our foolishly heroic efforts to forget him. Particularly Baladev Vidyabhushan has given the, because he's giving all these two verses, the meanings of the names of Vishnu, in relation to the churning of the milk ocean. So Vishnu, he or she, or he and she, because he also appeared as she, as Mohini Murti, he appeared in 4 or 5 forms during this Leela. He and she vanquished the demons who were eager to attain the nectar from the milk ocean. So they were heroes. And she also addressed, Mohini Murthy also addressed them as great heroes. So men like it when women address them in such flattering terms, just like women like it when men refer to them as very beautiful or something like this. So the next name is Madhava. Very well-known name. But I'm not going to get into it much because it's already appeared in Vishnu. I'm going through Vishnu Sahasranam. This is name 169. It's already appeared once and I already spoke on it at some length. But one meaning of Madhava is the husband of Lakshmi. And of course, in the churning of the milk ocean, so many different things came out before the nectar came. And one of the things was Lakshmi. So, one of her names, in Udupi area, I believe it is, there's a truck company with the name Samudraja. You see that? Do you see that? You remember that? That it's written on some of the trucks. Samudraja. She's born from the ocean. Yeah, the milk ocean. So you remember seeing that? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that means she's born from the milk ocean. And Vishnu accepted her. So this name is appropriate in this connection. Oh, the next name, Madhu. And I forgot to bring my computer. I had it all set up. You want to run. Madhu means, what does it mean?
Honey,
sweet, yeah. So this is the name for Vishnu, which is particularly appropriate for Krishna, although Krishna and Vishnu are non-different. But although they're non-different, they're different also. And one particular difference between Krishna and Vishnu, well, there are four particular, they're four madhuris, or particularly sweet characteristics. There's Venu Madhuri, the sweetness of his flute. Leela Madhuri, the sweetness of his pastimes. Rupa Madhuri, the sweetness of his threefold bending form. And Prema Madhuri. Wow, that was very quick. The sweetness of his love and his loving devotees. So, Krishna is very sweet. And actually, Narayan is very sweet also. It's not to say that he's not sweet. He's definitely very sweet. But the sweetness of Krishna is, even though the sweetness of Narayan is unlimited, but the sweetness of Krishna is more unlimited. This is not a logical statement according to mathematics or logic, but nevertheless, it's true. So he's very sweet. He creates, just by remembering him, seeing him, anything to do with him, although to the demons they think of him like poison, but to the devotees, any thought of Krishna is very sweet, causes great satisfaction. Madhu also means knowledge. Some other points. Baladev Vidyabhushan says that by his sweetness, he enchanted Lakshmi at the milk ocean. She naturally gravitated toward him because she wanted to find who's the sweetest, and she naturally found Narayan. And all the demigods and the demons also. She charmed all of them. Now, regarding the sweetness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, There is a famous song by Sri Vallabhacharya, which is famous. I don't know if it's famous in America, but it's famous among Vaishnavas. Do you all know this? I think you don't know this. Madhurashtakam, the song about Krishna's sweetness. So I'll sing it verse by verse and then give the translation. It just describes that everything about Krishna is very sweet. Adharang madhurang vadanang madhurang nayanang madhurang hasitang madhurang hridayang madhurang gamanang madhurang madhuradhipate akhilam madhuram. So what's so sweet about Krishna? What's the answer? His lips are sweet. His face is sweet. His eyes are sweet. His smile is sweet. His heart is sweet. His gait is sweet. That's G-A-I-T. That means his way of walking is sweet. Everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. Vachanang madhurang charitang madhurang vasanang madhurang valitang madhuram chalitang madhurang bhramitang madhurang madhuradhipater akhilam madhuram. His words are sweet, his character is sweet, his dress is sweet, his belly folds are sweet. It's very analytical. Belly fold, that means the lines. Well, let's have a little look at that. Valitam. Your valitam is very sweet. Yes, the Rupa Goswami also analyzes. Yeah, analyzes that. Three lines like on a conch. Very sweet. Everything's sweet. Chalitam. His movements are sweet. His wandering here and there is very sweet. Like a bumblebee is also called Bhramara, because it wanders here and there looking for pollen to turn into honey, looking for sweet flowers. Everything, what is sweet about him? Everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. Venur madhuro, renur madhura, panir madhurav pado madhuro, nrityang madhurang sakhyang madhurang madhuradhipater akhilam madhuram. His flute is sweet. His foot dust is sweet. His hands are sweet. His feet are sweet. His dancing is sweet. His friendship is sweet. Everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. Gitang madhurang, pitang madhurang, bhuktang madhurang, suktam madhurang, rupang madhuram, tilakang madhurang, madhuradhipater akhilam madhuram. His singing is sweet. Of course, that could also be understood that his Bhagavad Gita is sweet. His, here it says pita, which means yellow. So that's understood to be his yellow cloth, because Krishna was known as pitambara, pitavas. His yellow cloth is sweet. His eating is sweet. His sleeping is sweet. His beauty is sweet, or his form is sweet. His tilak is sweet. Everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. Karanang madhurang, taranang madhuram, haranang madhuram, ramanang madhuram, vamitang madhurang, shamitam madhuram, Madhuradhipater Akhilam Madhuram. His deeds, his activities are very sweet. His liberating is sweet, or his delivering others from various situations is sweet. His stealing is sweet. His love sports are sweet. His oblations are sweet. His tranquility is sweet. Everything is sweet about the Emperor of Sweetness. Gunja Madhura Mala Madhura Yamuna Madhura Vichi Madhura Salilang Madhuram Kamalang Madhuram Madhura Dhipater Akhilam Madhuram. His gunja berry necklace is sweet. His flower garland is sweet. His Yamuna is sweet. His ripples are sweet. His water is sweet. His lotuses are sweet. Everything is sweet about the Emperor of Sweetness. Gopi Madhura Lila Madhura Yuktang Madhurang Bhuktang Madhurang Hrishtang Madhuram Shishtang Madhurang Madhuradhipater Akhilam Madhuram. His gopis are sweet. His pastimes are sweet. His union is sweet, being united with him. His food is sweet. His delight is sweet. His courtesy, or general good behavior, shishtam, is sweet. Everything is sweet about the Emperor of Sweetness. Gopa Madhura Gavo Madhura Yashtir Madhura Shrishtir Madhura Dalitang Madhurang Phalitang Madhuram Madhuradhipater Akhilang Madhuram. His gopas, the cowherd friends, they are sweet. His cows are sweet. His stick is sweet. His creation is sweet. His trampling or beating down others, that's also sweet. Dalita Hiranyakashipu, we hear that. The first Dalit of the universe, Hiranyakashipu. So that's also sweet. Otherwise, why do we like to hear about Krishna killing Hiranyakashipu? Is it all very sweet? It's the basic quality of sweetness pervades everything. And his fruitfulness is sweet. Everything is sweet about the Emperor of Sweetness. There's a saying in Sanskrit drama, Madhurena Samapayat. One should finish sweetly so we don't have bad endings. Everything, they all lived happily ever after. That's a sweet ending. So, on that sweet note, Hare Krishna.
Where do we usually hear this song? It's very
familiar. Vallabh Sampradaya sing it, and nowadays in ISKCON many devotees sing it also.
They wouldn't sing it in the Krishna temple because of the mention of the gopis, but maybe they
could. Who, the Vallabh Sampradaya?
No, in the Krishna temple.
In Udupi. Yeah, I noticed that. That's nice.
I say when I'm going to town, I say I'm going to Udupi. No one ever notices it. He doesn't even know. They say, where do you live?
It's such a nice place. I love Udupi also.
Somehow it's nice. But when the ladies are making the garland in the back, they sing.
Maybe they sing that also. Well, they're not against the... You'd have to see the tradition. Maybe you know more about the das. What do they call the... Dasakuta, the Purandar Das, and all of those. Quite likely they...
There's a picture in the...
Yeah, temple. Yeah.
Make the first round of Krishna with the
gopis. Yeah, so...
They understand Vrindavan, but they just don't...
They don't emphasize it that much.
They don't enter that, what we call the Madhurya.
Yeah. It's a very Aishvarya Yukta. But then it's very, because Krishna himself is very sweet, holding his stick there.
I think that's where I hear
Cowherd Boy, yeah. Quite lightly they sing it there, yeah. It's a very sweet mood in Krishna temple.
Maybe you can email me.
This? Oh, yeah, okay. Well, it's in the Veda base. Do you have it there? Yes, so you can look up Madhurashtakam. That's what I did yesterday. And, yeah, it's very nice to sing. Very nice to sing. Everything about Krishna is sweet. So we... Nectar, just like nectar, yeah.
What are the five ishi of the Samudra Jata?
The five appearances of Vishnu
in Samudra Jata.
In the churning of the milk ocean. Well, Vishnu himself, first of all, demigods went to him and he joined with them and said, okay, let's take Vasuki's head. And then he joined with the demigods. And then the demon said, no, we'll take the head. You take the tail. So Vishnu was there pulling.
Was Vasuki
Pindu? Well, not in this case. He's one of the Vibhutis, isn't he? But actual appearances of Vishnu. Then as Kurma, he appeared. Then as the many-handed form on top of Mandara Mountain. As Dhanvantari, he appeared. And as Mohini. So five direct appearances. And then if you take Vibhutis, then you have Indra himself, Vasuki, Indra's Airavata appeared out of the milk ocean. His horse, Uchai Shravasa. What's his name? Indra's Uchai Shravasa.
I thought Bali took the horse. Indra took the elephant.
Was it? Okay. Yeah, Airavata appeared. So there are so many Vibhutis appeared also.
And
Mandara also is one of the mentioned in the Gita chapter 10. And many more are mentioned in the Uddhava Gita. Many Vibhutis like that. Uchai Shravasa Ashvanam.
Not so much about the Madhurya.
The sweetness of Narayana. Well, jumping from Udupi a little east, the Sri Sampradaya, I mean, they bring out very much the sweetness, don't they, of the various for how they emphasize the bhaktavatsalya as the principal quality of the Lord, his vatsalya, parent-like protective affection for his devotees. And they often give, they're concentrating on Lakshmi, on Narayana, and they often give the example of the cow to the calf. Even though the calf, when it's born, is covered in all kinds of not very attractive things, but the cow immediately starts to lick. So even though we may be covered in all kinds of unpleasant anarthas, but still the Lord is very affectionate to his devotees. So generally they Narayana like that, although they like to think of his different forms also.
In the Sri
Sampradaya.
The general worship of Narayan, they don't expand upon it. It's more awe and admiration.
Awe and reverence. But in Sri Sampradaya, it's very, very sweet also, yeah. I think maybe that's more in North India.
Yeah, it's not. More in Gujarat.
Yeah.
Mostly Gujarat.
Yeah. But Gujarat is more influenced by the Vallabhs, I mean, in terms of pure Vaishnavism, although there are all kinds. There are Swaminarayan Sampradaya, they worship Lakshminarayan. It used to be they had Lakshminarayan in the center and then Swaminarayan on the side. Then they put Swaminarayan in the center and Lakshminarayan on the side. Then only Swaminarayan. And now they have only Pramukh Swami, and Swaminarayan's even out.
When you say Pramukh Swami, who is Pramukh
Swami? Oh, you don't know who Pramukh Swami is? You're lucky.
Is it?
He's Akshara Brahma Swarup. He's the living manifestation of the impersonal Brahman. He's over 80 years old.
He's a mortal being.
He certainly is. He's the most prominent sadhu in Gujarat, and he's often identified with the Swami Narayan Sampradaya, although he's actually from a rebel Sampradaya which has become bigger than the main one.
I don't
either. If you want to know, ask Basu Ghosh. She knows it in more detail than they do. Yeah, you don't need to know all of this. There's nothing very sweet about it.
That's all.
Yes, please.
Maharaj, I heard you talking about Udupi. If one was touring around India in general for a few months, other than the normal places that ISKCON goes, what are your top three recommendation places?
Touring around India for a few months. Well, I wouldn't do that unless I was preaching, actually, which I do all the time, actually. It's my whole life is touring around India.
Someone was touring around India. What's your top three?
My top three might be different to your top three because it's all a question of taste, isn't it? In the south, you're saying in particular?
Anywhere in India. That's
a big question. Well, I might. I guess you mean outside of ISKCON, is it?
Well, other than the places devotees normally go, do you have any, like Udupi would be one?
If you have to say three, I'd say Udupi Sri Rangama Nathdwara. Off the top of my head. Nathdwara.
It's next to
But one place I only visited once, it's very remote, but it's very sweet, is Chitrakoot. You ever go there?
I never travel outside of my
service. Outside of your
I've never been.
I've managed to dovetail it all with service because I wrote BTG articles. And then I take devotees and we have Shravan Kirtan camps and like this.
I've never been to Tirupati.
You've never been to Tirupati?
My life is spoiled.
Well, nowadays, if I go to Tirupati, I don't go up the hill for darshan because it's so inhuman the way they treat you. And even this Chinnajiya Swami, who's the most prominent Ramanuja Sampradaya sannyasi, in the modern age, he won't go either, out of protest. I take darshan in the ISKCON temple. You can, as long as you like, very nicely.
That's the downside of the Udupi.
You mean the way they treat you in the standing in the line and pushing you?
Well, especially when you go for darshan, they just push you out. They used to in Tirupati, they used to let our ISKCON devotees stand for some time.
Well, they don't do that.
Now they just push you out.
Is there any Baba in the temple, you know, other than the darshan?
Where? Well, the people are all in a joyous mood. They're always calling out, Govinda! And then everyone in the line will call out, Govinda! So that's nice. It's definitely a place of culture, you see. Tamil, Telugu, both, yeah. Yeah. So India's, there's no doubt, it's a very special place. You can make here also.
My favorite place is between Calcutta and Bhubaneswar. Is Ramuna,
yeah.
The Ramuna. I never went to the beach, but Madhavacharya,
Madhavendrapuri Samadhi.
Yeah, and
you never went to where?
The beach.
What beach? There's no beach.
Yeah, it was a famous beach because
Oh, that's quite some distance from the temple. Because the temple's west of, you mean at Baleshwar? Is it at Baleshwar, the beach? I don't know, because Ramuna's west of Baleshwar. And close to Ramuna is also Gopibalapur. That's a very nice place. But it's remote, and now it's in Maoist country, so... It's in West Bengal, but they speak, the language they speak is like that, Jharkhandi or some. It's on the border, if you see the map, it's just on the border of Orissa, West Bengal and Jharkhand. It's traditionally part of Utkal, but it's in West Bengal. That's a very nice place. Great place of culture, but it's... Well, yes. Don't travel at night, especially. Well, no, you can't unless you want to walk anyway, because no one, the buses don't travel after dark.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They stop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you want to risk your bus for? Get it burned.
It was only me driving on the road.
I see. Oh, in that area, yeah. Well, I mean, even before all this insurgence, it was anyway, it was always, this area has always been dacoit area, and this and that. It's just, I mean, way back in Chaitanya Charitamrita time, you can see also.
It's a good thing I didn't read that part of Chaitanya.
Well, not that area in particular, but Bihar, like that. And it's always been like that. Nothing new, but a great lot of very deep old culture, and it should be one of the purposes of our movement to help to revive that.
Where?
Everywhere.
Oh.
It's not my idea that we should take over all these different sampradayas, but we should rather revive them in their own, encourage them to revive them in their own glory. Not that we have to close them all down, take them over, convert every temple to an ISKCON temple. I don't see that was Srila Prabhupada's mission. Encourage them to do what they're doing. They have such tremendous Vaishnav culture. And all their songs, thousands and thousands of songs in all the regional languages, and encourage people to sing these.
What the Srila Prabhupada explained about Islam, the righteous government of a Vaishnava, or guided by a Vaishnava. The government doesn't have to be Vaishnava.
Yeah.
Guided by the Vaishnava. They will say, oh, you follow your religion.
Right. Srila Prabhupada always said that,
don't
yeah.
Be bogus Muslim. You should be good Christian, you should be good Muslim.
Right.
So if that is true, then what to speak of these, which have certainty in their process.
Maharaj, the definition of Sahasrana, do we have compilation in the book form of meanings of all the names?
Yeah. It's available on the internet. Vishnu Sahasranam. It's available in hard copy also. Well, I've looked at different editions. I use the dictionary, and yesterday when I was talking with Yogendra Vandana Prabhu and Dvibhuj Prabhu, then in the course of discussing some other, yesterday I discussed Vedya, Vaidya, Sada Yogi, and some other meaning, some more depth of the meaning was revealed by the Vaidya, by Krishna. So that, because there may be unlimited meanings. Madhvacharya proposed to explain each name of Vishnu Sahasranam with 1,000 meanings.
Wow.
So. So most of the commentators give 1, 2, or maximum 3, although they could probably, I'm sure they could all give many more. And so I mostly follow the commentaries here, and then if Krishna reveals any more meanings to me, then I speak them also.
Name or to speak of name, But even one word on Bhagavad Gita, we can go on discussing for years.
Unlimited. It's unlimited.
So what to speak of the name which is the source of all the words?
Unlimited. The
personality himself reveals himself within the name.
Yeah.
So all the madhuryas of all the other names are in every name.
Yeah.
That's why I was asking about the Narayan, because it's different.
And then if you want, you can take many of these in Vrajalila also. Just like Vaidya, doctor, how Krishna becomes a doctor to treat Radharani's disease. And this Vishwanath Chakravarti has told such intimate stories. But I won't discuss that now, because it is very intimate.
It's a question that I was wondering about, and since you're leaving soon, maybe you wouldn't mind. Just my thoughts are that now, you know, we see so many of Prabhupada's disciples are leaving, and devotees seem like hesitant to say outright, oh, they went back to Krishna. And of course, only, you know, Prabhupada was maybe only the one qualified or privy to that information, how he spoke of Jainanda Prabhu, that he went back to Krishna. But you hear like different pastimes, like amazing pastimes of other devotees leaving, and like one pastime I heard was that it may have been Upendra Prabhu, that this devotee who left for some time, then he was dying, and his dying words were, Prabhupada, you've come. And so even he was, you know, like, I don't know how you'd say, out of the loop for sometimes. And then maybe towards the end again, returned, and Prabhupada was there. So I was just wondering, like, what are your realizations about that, the devotees of Prabhupada that, and their destination?
Followers of Srila Prabhupada leaving the world, where do they go? Well, I was just discussing this last night with Ramakeli Prabhu, as much as he could discuss. I mean, he's mentally there, but as you've probably seen, he's difficult for him to talk. And with Shikhi Mahiti Prabhu. So Shikhi Mahiti said, well, what's the qualification for going back to Godhead? And I said, well, Prabhupada said you have to be completely pure. And Ramakeli, he put up his finger, as you say, in affirmation. Yes, you have to be complete. Then this is just my own realization about myself, that I long ago, you could say this as a cop-out, but anyway, I long ago gave up hope of, at my present rate of sadhana and progress, of becoming anywhere near completely pure. So I'm just trying to do what I can and relying on Prabhupada's mercy, that's all. And, yeah, and it's... And as far as I can see, most of our God brothers and God sisters are thinking like that. But at the same time, we had to be very careful not to turn it into a Jesus cult where we just don't bother doing anything and just leave it all up to Him. Just, I believe in Jesus, and that's all you have to do. So we had to be very careful of that, because Prabhupada did give us a process to follow of daily sadhana, service, all this. So if we sincerely apply ourselves to that, and by saying that I'm relying on Prabhupada's mercy, that doesn't mean that I think that I've got a guaranteed ticket back to Godhead. Because to go back to Godhead, you have to be completely pure.
Any, just, it was about anything.
Any material desire. But the thing is that any material desires don't come in ones. But the idea is there, yeah. You may not have very gross desires.
We are lingering.
Yeah.
That we are keeping from Krishna taking away.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Guruji Prabhu is always fond of reminding us that when Prabhupada was here, one of the things he said that Yogendra Vandana must have heard him as well, that if you chant and follow and stay in the association of the devotees, that I guarantee that even if you can't remember Krishna at the moment of your death, he will force himself into your mind.
Mm.
And then he said, I am not flattering you, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita.
Mm. But we actually have to follow the process. It's not just a matter of being a member of a club or a church. We have to apply ourselves to the process.
That's true, the Prabhupada said, initiation.
Yeah, initiation is just the beginning, and initiation is, it's a big step for the average person in the modern age. To vow to follow four regulated principles and chant minimum 16 rounds every... It's a very big step for the average person, but that's only a beginning.
I think intrinsic in this, where you're pointing out rubber stamp and the Jesus type of thing, is the devotee's understanding that without Krishna's exceptional mercy, that he's helpless. So no matter, especially as one is more advanced, if we listen to the words of Srila Prabhupada when he would reflect on himself, not speaking so that he would patronize himself, that as a fallen soul, so that his disciples could identify, but where he would actually speak how he felt about himself, or you'd see him. He would say things when he was just exhibiting the most humble mood of his own feeling, of how he was without qualification. And that the more that one understands that, that no matter what one does, one is initiated, that all this helps, one may follow everything perfectly, but Krishna's causeless mercy, one has to cry for it.
Mm.
One has to cry, Krishna, I understand everything, but without your mercy, how will I do it?
And if one doesn't cry for Krishna's mercy, then you're not going to get it. And it is mercy.
We can always understand Krishna is kind, but from our point of view, we have...
But what I mean is that one shouldn't be complacent and think that one is automatically qualified for Krishna's mercy.
Second generation dying or about to die. So then everybody's saying, well, they went back to Godhead.
Let's see, about Jayananda, Prabhupada said that he wrote that letter after Jayananda. You may or may not, he said, if you had any trace of material desire, then you would have gone to the heavenly planets. But I think you went back to God.
Gita Krishna says, Suchi Srimate.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Krishna,
they're on the way.
Even in the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada comments that of the two groups of gopis, the ones who could not come because they were restricted and they died, they joined Krishna in his next leela. And Prabhupada comments about that. The devotees, even their perfection is compared to what most of us can aspire to is millions fold. The gopis who were the second group of gopis who were associated with Krishna. So despite their being so superlatively perfect, they had some imperfection. And Krishna, Srila Prabhupada explains from the Krishna book that they took their next birth to be with Krishna and then they were perfect. He said, and Prabhupada uses the term, and the training goes on. So actually, when we look through all of this, one does not exactly go back to Godhead, but one, Prabhupada explains that one joins Krishna in his leela.
In Bhoma Vrindavan, yeah.
Leela, and in that, and all the last shreds of very, very, very subtle imperfections, which he explains in the third canto, 81 imperfections of the modes of nature, very subtly mixed in devotion. And this is already very advanced, where those 81 imperfections are mixed in devotional service. Even in goodness, there's 9 imperfections mixed in devotional service. 27. So even those all those are unshredded, pulverized by Krishna's association.
Mm.
And even then, could wind up like that second group of gopis, who they just had that imperfection, that attachment, and then they died wanting to see Krishna. And then they were relieved of all the imperfections and took the next perfect birth in Boma, Vrindavan.
Mm.
So all this can make us really feel, wow, you know, we have so far to go.
They do, yeah.
And they then become more eager to cry for Krishna. Krishna, wow, you know, without your mercy, without Prabhupada's kindness, how will we do this? How will we do it? Especially I'm seeing, you know, near
yeah.
encounters. Without, you know I can't think, no way, I want to, unless Krishna says, you take birth, that's okay. But otherwise, wow, taking birth, how does one escape except birth? It's so birth, that birth again. So horrible to think that again, oh my God, going through this the amount of hell. But if Krishna wants it, if Prabhupada wants it, we will accept it. But otherwise, Krishna, do with me something nice. None of this craziness, insanity.
Thank you, Mama.
Thank you, Tejas Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Jai Hare Krishna. Tejas Prabhu ki. All glories to the assembled devotees.